Money and markets, the politics of a bipolar world continue to emerge. Hands down, the most important story this week, a very significant precedent, our leadership, Americans' leadership in legal terrorism. The sheriff of Nottingham took a new aggressive turn. The U.S. indicted five in China's secret unit 61398 for cyber spying on U.S. firms. Is that calling the pot calling the kettle black? Monday's indictment is the first that the U.S. has filed against a state actor for cyber theft, says Attorney General Eric Holder. He cited the need for an aggressive response. Obviously, no one's expecting a trial. The gentleman is safely tucked away. But when you look at this on top of the Russian sanctions, particularly against people close to Putin and legislators, we're talking about something that's really the Midianite thing, as I call it, getting out of hand. We are all doing these things, and it's a new wave that started about 20 years ago of taking criminal charges and applying it to somebody who's acting on behalf of a sovereign government. We've been doing it here in the United States. I mean, that was what was used against me during the sort of battle over engineering up the housing bubble. But we're watching targeting individual actors acting as part of their governmental duties being targeted by criminal laws. And the problem is here, if you look at the people implementing those actions, they have a long history of corruption and cronyism themselves. So my impression of Eric Holder is he's not someone who believes in the law or feels bound by it other than as a tool to be used to affect politics and force. This all gets back to soft weapons. One of the reasons people like Holder and Obama were chosen is that American and African-American faces a much more effective front for an economic warfare machinery, including one that's implementing genocide against minority populations. That's why Holder was so effective in the sweep to sort of round up kids, throw them into prison, and get the private prison thing going. So this kind of legal terrorism, as I said, has been expanding for the last couple decades, and this is taking it to a whole new level, especially when it's backed up with a covert capacity for surveillance and physical harassment. But when you use it against sovereign governments and military, the potential for blowback is very significant because you're personalizing it and creating enormous incentives for people to really make the fight personal. Putin has been very astute in his reliance and attention to international law and basing his approach on the values of the church. Pope Francis has been very focused on similar kinds of things. There's no one in the United States who can speak with this kind of authority, and that makes it a very dangerous business that we're about. Of course, we see China and Russia enter into a 30-year deal, signing a $400 billion gas deal this Wednesday. Now, that gives Moscow a big replacement market for what they're losing in their closeness and their ties to Europe, which has traditionally been Moscow's main energy market. Of course, this means very big investments in pipelines and other infrastructure that's very much going to tie the Chinese and the Russians. Much chatter about this is sort of the end of the dollar. I don't believe it. If anything, you see Russia probably pricing this deal at lower than what they're currently getting from Europe. But it's quite a healing of the Sino-Soviet rift, which has been very strong and clearly is going to sort of improve a little bit of the hole that the events in the Ukraine have left in the Russian budget and the Russian economy. So it's all moving towards the rebalancing of the global economy in the long run, but this is clearly much stronger ties between the Russian and the Chinese. And so this bipolar world where China, Russia, and the United States continue to dance around each other, it wouldn't surprise me to see if the squabble over the South China Sea and our support of Japan, the Philippines, and Vietnam being part of why the Chinese finally did do this deal. But it's clear, if you look at the pricing, it looks to me like they were able to squeeze Putin a fair amount and take advantage of the situation. I have a commentary up on the blog. Proof positive Fed governors do not shop for groceries. We have a statement from the April 29th to 30th meeting, the minutes released in Washington, saying you know, no concern that their policy is causing inflation. And you say, so I said, clearly they don't shop for groceries. I had posted last week the commentary on the producer price index and the incredible increases in the prices of food. What we're seeing in terms of basic expenses is significant. The deflation, if it is incomes, and that's as a result of the compromise of online systems and their use for economic warfare on top of everything else. So no need to worry about income inflation. Jim Poplava over at Financial Sense has a very interesting article. He calls it the 7 megatrends, and it's amazing how it echoes our annual wrap-up and the first quarter wrap-up. 6 of his trends were ones that we highlighted. 1 is the domestic energy renaissance, 2 manufacturing renaissance. Has a list from somebody at Schwab of all the companies that have moved capacity back into the United States worth looking at. Revolution in education, we talked about transformation of retail, we've talked about development of the Central Corridor. I called it the digital heartland. He points out the atrophy of other parts of the country that we've been talking about with the parts of the country that are doing 3.0 doing very well, the parts of the country still stuck in 2.0 not doing well. And then another one is accelerating advancements in technology, which we've talked a lot about as well. He doesn't, that I know of, mention space. And one of the things he talked about is the dominance of the U.S. financial markets. The U.S. financial markets are losing market share. They're going to continue to be powerful, but they are going to continue to lose market share as the global economy rebalances. But it's very interesting to see Jim line up with the same trends that we've had in the last 2 wrap-ups. And those are mega trends, and they're very, very important for each one of us to understand. We'll be talking and highlighting about them more in the second quarter wrap-up. Invasive communication systems everywhere you go. Edward Snowden has helped educate us all into what this means in terms of the global economy and our personal powers. I put a book review up of a new book called The Curtain by Patrick Ord. It's kind of beach reading, but it really helps you understand the impact of the data and sort of the way the game is played. So it's very useful in terms of helping you get into what this is doing to all our lives. And then I also finished, and I'll put a review up on the blog, Glenn Greenwald's notebook, No Place to Hide, Edward Snowden, the NSA and the U.S. Surveillance System. I'd read a lot of Greenwald's pieces, but it's very useful to have the story in one book and go through it together, and it gives you a good sense of how deeply disturbing, again, the U.S. surveillance system is. It's frustrating. I was also this week looking through all of our budgets for telecommunications and internet systems, and prices continue to go up, 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 while the quality continues to go down, down, down. Not to mention these are really pipelines used to destroy our privacy, so we're basically paying a whole bunch of telecommunications and software companies who are basically stealing our data and turning it over to the government, lying to us about it. It's very, very frustrating to find yourself deeply dependent on wholly compromised systems. The Greenwald story, you always have the feeling that you're only hearing half the story. Because of my personal experiences dealing in these kinds of situations at a very intimate level, you know, of course, my question is, there's no way Snowden could do this without having a huge air cover. Not to say that he understood or knew that, but you kind of feel like the deeper story is left out. And there's a lot of why, wherefores, and who's really controlled that are just not in Greenwald's story. But in terms of illuminating the NSA system, very useful. And I think this story has been very significant in producing sort of the bipolar shifts that we're seeing. There is real trouble in mortgage land. The Federal Housing Finance Agency, who now has regulatory responsibilities for many things, including Freddie and Fannie, implied that their mortgage bond task force still had many more probes to go. These probes being used by the Department of Justice to basically shake down a lot of the financial institutions for big settlements. Of course, no individuals being penalized or going to jail. We reserve that for Chinese members of the cyber hacking task force. But American officials or banks who steal from Americans, you know, no problem. Now, of course, the federal government has real problems, since clearly they were as guilty, if not more guilty, as the big banks in engineering the the housing bubble and all the sort of mortgage fraud. Anyway, but the going around and around on fraud continues, and we see one mortgage servicer now announce in their servicing deals that you're not allowed to say bad things about them publicly. So to get a mortgage, you have to gag yourself in terms of criticizing of them if they should defraud you later on. This is quite amazing, since I'm certainly somebody who's had terrible problems with servicers, and I, of course, talk about some of it on the radio. The Fed's got a problem because housing is sort of cooling off, and a lot has been done both in the Fed talk and announcements from the federal regulators that they're going to loosen terms on new mortgages. The reality is you now have investors who've got big positions in single family housing and multifamily too. They want to do IPOs or securitize their portfolios. That's a problem if the housing market cools or the stock market cools. They need both to be hot. And so there's going to be a lot of political pressure this year and then coming into the presidential election year, because those guys are big donors, particularly on the Democratic side, on both sides, but particularly on the Democratic side. So there's going to be a lot of pressure to do whatever it takes to juice up the housing markets. Markets were tough over the last week. They continued to chop sideways, up, down, up, down. One of the challenges for the S&P is you're seeing the real bricks and mortar retail chains struggling on earnings. We saw a lot of the retailers off this week, Staples, Office Depot, others. What's very interesting is if you look at consumer staples versus consumer discretionary being the more upscale, obviously, the discretionary is underperforming the staples. When people get worried about the economy, more money tends to shift to the staples. But what's interesting is if you look into the food markets, we see the fresh food grocers absolutely getting crushed. If you look at the stocks of Whole Foods, Fresh Market, Sprouts, all these guys, they're getting crushed compared to the older mainline grocery stores like Kroger or Safeway. And the spread is pretty wide. And you almost wonder, what's the deeper story here? Is this divergence temporary, or is the real pressure coming related to the struggle over GMO? We're going to have Jeffrey Smith on in 2 weeks. We're going to be talking about fresh food and sort of the state of politics there, and we'll get into the deeper fundamentals in the industry.